Welcome back, podcasters, to the Tomahawk Nation Hoops Dedicated podcast. We are coming at you with a championship edition here on a Sunday afternoon in Tallahassee, Florida. I am Matt Minnick, joined by Michael Rogner, as always, and Florida State. Florida State completed what honestly I think a lot of folks probably would have never deemed possible if you'd asked them 5, 6, 7, even a couple years ago. Florida State, for the first time in school history, won the ACC regular season title. You'll know that Florida State was the ACC champions in 2012. They won the ACC championship in 2012, which is officially determined by the ACC tournament. Michael, what are your long-time fellow fan here? What was yesterday like for you?
The game was, we don't probably need to even talk about the game because we both said that it had the potential to be like a 25, 30-point game, but Florida State would somehow let it be in the teens, which is exactly what happened.
Exactly what happened.
Right.
I set the number at 17.5, and they won by 18, right?
Right. Yeah, I think I picked under, you picked over or something. So
yeah,
And after, you know, we talk a lot about the ACC tournament being the that's the winner of the ACC, and that's how it's always been, that's how it always will be. But you can see how much, you know, the regular season matters to these guys when, you know, Ham's up on a ladder cutting down the net, and, you know, and the fans are going crazy, and it's super important. It's the first time it's happened. You know, Florida State joined this place, what, like, you know,
92.
Yeah, and this is the very first time it's happened, and so kudos to the team. It's not the team that you would expect that would have, you know, done it. They were picked fifth in the preseason, and I you know, you and I both had them a little further down than first place. It's been a, you know, a heck of a ride, and it was super fun to watch, you know, just the you know, the enthusiasm and all the celebrations and, you know, all that stuff that comes with having a great season, you know, knowing that they have to immediately go to the locker room and, you know, celebrate for a couple hours and then get right back to it, because, you know, the important, there's still some important nets out there to cut down. And, you know, this will be a short celebration for these guys, but it'll be something that we remember for an awfully long time.
Absolutely. Well said. And you know what? The crowd yesterday, Michael, I got to give credit. It was, you know, the game, like you said, the game was not all that impressive. There was several times where Florida State was hunting some big, you know, kind of top 10 highlight plays, never really connected on any of them. A few alley-oops were sloppily missed, but the crowd was really lively. You know, even on just made jumpers, and, you know, the array of Bolsa Koprivica dunks, the crowd was really into it from the tip and lively, and you could tell that they really sensed that something special was happening, and that they were a part of a moment that would forever be remembered. You know, people always talk about, oh, the Cassell and Sura days and Ward and the Pat Kennedy, but this team, and really last year's team, and the last 4 years have, to be quite honest, have exceeded any of that. I know those teams were exciting. I used to go to those games, and they were up and down action, and it's kind of, you know, people like to romanticize about the past, but none of those teams accomplished anything like this. Those teams still, they all had actually double digit. If you go back and look, I mean, they were like 25 and 10. They were good basketball teams that didn't frequently play defense. And this team has certainly accomplished something that they will be able to point to up in the banners for the rest of their lives. And so that was fantastic to watch. Basketball is a sport of tournaments. It has always been that way. Whether, you know, the NIT used to be kind of the tournament to win, and then of course that was replaced by the NCAA tournament, and you used to have top five teams in the country not even make the NCAA tournament because they didn't win their conference tournament. So basketball by nature is a sport in which you play on multiple days in a row, and it's a tournament-based game, and the official ACC championship will always go to that tournament winner. And so, you know, that is something still to play for, but cutting down the nets is an incredible experience. And you know what? It's winning. We've talked about it often. Winning is a skill. winning breeds more winning. And so when you get up there and you experience a moment like that, I think Hamilton talked about it yesterday, you want to experience more like that. And so I think these guys will be hungry to cut down, you know, the nets in Greensboro, and who knows, maybe even cut down the nets in Atlanta. I want to say one or two thoughts about the Boston College game, and then maybe I'll ask you, but 15 people scored. How about that? That is the epitome of Hamilton basketball. 15 guys. A lot of teams don't even have 15 players on the roster. 15 guys scored, and 17 guys actually recorded a stat. So they have that 18 strong mantra, and boy, did they live into it yesterday. And it was just a really, really fantastic experience to be a part of. I consider myself lucky. Do you have any other thoughts on the Boston College game, or and we can move on?
Yeah, you did throw out Boss's name, but man, 15 points in 11 minutes. That he had a hell of a game, and it's important. You know, we're kind of seeing him develop and see what we're going to get next year. You know, guys like that are super important, especially in the out of conference season, because you know you see a lot of teams kind of losing to you know, like sub 200 teams. But if you have a guy like Bosa who you can just pound it into against those smaller teams, that kind of doesn't eliminate your chances of losing those kind of games, but it definitely reduces it. And so Florida State is developing a 7-footer. He's got tons of skill. He was all on display yesterday. Super excited to see him, you know, kind of develop into, you know, his sophomore year. And then Dom also, you know, he deserves a shout out. Senior day, first time his parents have seen him ever play a college basketball game. And he goes out and he scores 14 points and then was, you know, was typical Dom, you know, super physical, you know, very emotional. So that was fun to see.
Yeah, no, great shout outs to both. And really, man, those guys, Florida State really didn't shoot that well. They cleaned up a lot of trash around the basket. They established themselves on the block, and no, it was great to see Dom and Bolsa probably have what, 5 or 6 dunks between the two of them, and just really aggressively going after it. That's something that I'd love to see for another, let's see here, 9 games if we were to play every one of them left. I heard rumor there was a big recruit in the house. Is that can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, there were actually, I think by my count, there were 6.
I saw some tall guys standing around for sure.
Yeah, they were all there on unofficials, and so it's, you know, it's kind of hard to get too close to them. But Jaden Bradley was there, and he is you know, class of 2022. He's arguably the best point guard in the nation. A very important recruit. And then the Hendricks brothers were both there. They play over at university school. And Taylor Hendricks is he'll probably end up as a 4-star, maybe top 50 kind of player. And he is he's the one, if you looked in that lineup of tall guys standing around, that most likely looked like a Florida State player. You know, he's like 6'8", super long arms, really bouncy. He'll end up as a you know, sort of a power forward type guy. I mean, he'll play on the wing at Florida State, but yeah. So those two guys were in the house, and then you know, four other recruits. So it's got to be fun for those guys, and the way for Hamilton to keep this thing rolling is just keep the bodies churning and bring in the good players.
Yeah, I think. Why don't we talk a little bit about that too? Because you're right. There's nothing. I think nothing. We can put a pin on that Boston College game and zip it up. And great win. But you know, Hamilton talked a bit after the game about how they've really cultivated the culture and program and foundation that they have, and that they're kind of selective. That they don't go after. They don't just go after anybody, and they look for people who certainly are good basketball players. You know, Hamilton joked a little bit. He's something like, if I had a guy who could score 30 points and grab 15 rebounds a game, then sure, maybe I'd give him more minutes. Then maybe we'd have a little bit less of the substituting that he does. But, you know, typically that's not what we're going to get. And so he's actively looking for guys that are willing to buy into the concept of the 18 strong and be willing to give it their all for 3 to 4 minutes at a time and put their hand up and go take a seat on the bench. And that is, and he talks about how they've been upfront with players about that. And I even think, for instance, this year you might see, you know, people like Jalen Green is an example of a guy who clearly had interest in Florida State, came and took a visit to Florida State. I don't know Jalen Green. I've never spoken to him one time. I don't know that he's necessarily looking for a school where he's going to take, you know, be one of seven guys who is leaned upon and take, you know, 8 or 10 shots a game as opposed to really be the focal point of a team in his 1 year in college basketball before he goes to the NBA. Now that Florida State has kind of established itself as a program of significance, do you think that the pitch changes? Are we, the Scotty Barnes seems like the unicorn out there where he's a top 10 kid and is defensive minded and selfless. I don't know. What's your thought on moving forward? How do you keep that culture and selfless nature going?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few ways to look at that. One is, you know, the pitch absolutely changes in a good way for the staff because they have, you know, lots of success to point to. They've got all, you know, guys in the NBA. They've got, they're cutting down nets. They're winning the ACC. So you've got that, you know, sort of background of success that you can sell to recruits, but also from the fans' perspective, like fans expect more now. You know, fans expect the team to be good, and you've got to be bringing in those guys every single year. You've got to be complimenting the guys like Scotty Barnes with 4-year guys, you know, or really high level JUCO transfers. You can't let this thing slip, because what we've seen in the past is that Florida State becomes a good school. And I'm thinking up through the 2012, you know, era where we went to the tourney 4 straight years. And if you look on the message boards back then, everybody was like, all it takes is consistent winning. And then you have a sort of a semi-permanent fan base. And then the next year, the place is empty, you know, and the Florida State fans are notably fickle when it comes to basketball. And even though everybody's saying the right things right now about Florida State being a basketball school and you know, the commitment from the fans is there and blah, blah, blah. If Florida State stinks next year, the fans are not going to be there. You know, this is not Purdue. You know, this is not, you know, pick any number of schools from the state of Indiana, you know, that are selling out games kind of regardless of the team. It's like Florida State, in order to maintain this, has to be a good basketball program. And you know, one down year and Florida State fans are like, oh, we gotta fire somebody. You know, I don't want to get too down on this thing, but the pressure is all on Ham right now to keep this train rolling. And luckily he's got the players lined up for next year. And there's a lot of 2021, 2022 guys that are super interested in Florida State. So the players, you know, hopefully are going to be there. And now the trick is just, you know, kind of closing the gap and, or, you know, getting those guys to sign, you know, in order to keep this thing going.
Yeah, that's, I think there's a lot of really poignant things you said there. I will say, as someone who was in Tallahassee for the 2009 to 2012 run, I attended nearly every home game during that stretch, and I've been in Tallahassee during this stretch. I will say that it does feel a little bit different. I am 100% agree. If Florida State came out and was an NIT team next year, I think it would be right back to 5,500 people in the stands. But I don't know if it's because football is down. I don't know if it's because people have finally gotten over the, like, well, Hamilton is just never going to be able to put a decent team. Like, sure, this was a fluke. We had, you know, whatever, one guy, Snare, saved us, you know. I'm not exactly sure. It does feel slightly different. I think part of that for me, as someone who is more than just a casual fan, is that you now have seen a very clear execution of a roster management plan that, you know, even after that 2012 season, we still were then, there were some gaps there. You know, we brought in Boris and Michael Ojo in the same class, which is a, you know, that's a lot of projects to take on at once. We had to really put all of our eggs in the Andrew Wiggins basket. Forget a plan B, didn't have a plan C. And that one, I think, hurt on multiple levels. And so, whereas now, you know, we're not putting all of our eggs in one basket, but second of all, we are also doing a great job of, to your point, identifying the John Isaac, the Dwayne Bacon, the Scotty Barnes each year. Florida State got a little bit lucky that Pat Williams kind of, I think, developed on a more accelerated path than perhaps a lot of folks were thinking, although at the end of last year it was clearly evident that this kid was experiencing some explosive growth as a basketball player. But then they're building then around with the Anthony Polites and the Raekwon Grays, the Raekwon Evans, Devin Vassells, who are going to be those 3-4 year guys. Shoot, Devin might only end up being a 2-year guy, but for good reason, because he accelerated his growth as opposed to stagnating. And so I do get a sense that there's a bit better of a vision. I think CY has been a huge part of that. And to Ham's credit, this is a guy who took a look in the mirror and self-scouted, evaluated, and realized that he had done some really great things, but in order to truly take it to the next level, perhaps the level that we've seen last year and this year, it required a little bit of a shakeup. And so they've got a fantastic staff. If I was a big man in the country, right, and if I was a top 50 recruit as a center, I wouldn't go anywhere else but to come and be tutored by Stan Jones. I don't understand what anyone would want to do differently there. So, and CY has done a great job, and the whole staff, Chuck has been great. The video staff, the video coordinators, I mean, this is a really good staff that Florida State has put together, and they're really starting to execute on a vision that seems to be kind of rolling downhill and picking up some steam. Florida State became the first team in the last 7 years, not named Virginia or North Carolina, to win the ACC regular season title, notably Duke. Hasn't done it since 2010, even though I think Ragnar, you mentioned earlier, they've been picked to do it every year, the last 3 or 4 years. But I don't know. Do you feel good about next year? You feel like, barring injuries, Florida State's got another top 25 team.
Absolutely. I feel great about the future. And I think that Ham has, demonstrated that he can build success and maintain success. I mean, if we lose Vassell and Patrick Williams, you know, then next year's team is maybe not looking, you know, quite as good as they could be. If Vassell goes, you know, the flip side of that is if Vassell goes to the NBA draft and his first round draft pick, that's two drafts in a row that Hamilton and staff have taken a 3-star and turned them into a first round draft pick,
which is bonkers.
By their sophomore year. And you know, Coach K is not doing that. Coach K has 3 stars on his roster. They are not getting drafted. You know, Calipari is not doing that. It is hard to find coaches who are identifying these guys, and not just identifying them early, but they never get bumped up to that 4th star, you know? So it's not even, you know, even their senior year, there's still, you know, some doubts about them, and he's turning them into first round draft picks. So yeah, that, you know, it's sort of it'd be a bittersweet thing to see Vassell go, and it'll hurt next year's team. But you know, that's also the kind of thing that kind of keeps recruiting going. So, you know, it's 6-1, half dozen of the other, but regardless of who's on the roster next year, I have full faith that, you know, we'll have another tournament team next year. And, you know, at worst, it'll be like a borderline top 25 team.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say this, the ACC is loaded next year. It is not going to be like this year where the top teams, Duke, Florida State, Virginia, all lost a lot of folks. I mean, people have been asking all season, oh, could you imagine if Florida State still had Fiondu and if Florida State still had CJ Walker? And that is not to take anything away from Florida State at all. What Florida State, I think, has put together a masterful job of having a team where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Everybody knows their role, they're executing it. And I don't know, maybe with someone like a Fiondu, where there's, you know, kind of like a go-to guy like that, particularly he wasn't necessarily the most willing passer all the time. Maybe that would have stunted some of the growth of someone like Devin Vassell or someone like MJ Walker, and we wouldn't see this kind of synergy that we've got going on. But next year's ACC is having an incredible influx of talent. There, you know, Sam Hauser right now is sitting out at UVA. I mean, that kid can flat out play basketball. He's a normal transfer. You've got a bunch of talented recruits coming in. I think UNC has, what, like four McDonald's All-Americans. Of course, Florida State has Scotty Barnes and Calhoun. So, you could see a Florida State team that is even equally as good next year, but maybe, you know, finishes with a conference record of 14-6 or 13-7, just because the league is going to look a lot different. But I agree with you that, you know, the roster, regardless of Vassell and Williams, the roster is set. And if either Vassell or Williams does come back, that starts to feel like a team that, like this year, is a legitimate Final Four contending team, and one that would be talked about, probably not be under the radar to start the season, given what Hamilton's been able to accomplish. Why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll come back with, I think there was a couple of interesting questions that were submitted to us, as well as a look at championship week and heading into the ACC tournament. Okay, back here with a championship edition of the Tomahawk Nation Hoops Dedicated podcast. Here we are gonna take a couple of questions that came in. I think they're good. They're appropriate questions given the time of year and the circumstances around this. So the first one here, Michael, is what would your selections be for the ACC first team, ACC second team, maybe player of the year, coach of the year? Why don't we start with give me your ACC first team selections?
In we played, I think it was the Notre Dame game, or Jay Billis, the game that Jay Billis was on the mic. Yeah, he said that there are four guys who are just absolute locks for the ACC first team. We will see when the votes come out. I can talk a little bit more about how the voting for Florida State has gone in the recent years, but those four guys are Vernon Carey of Duke, John Mooney of Notre Dame, Jordan Nwora from Louisville, and Devin Vassell from Florida State. And I will agree with Jay on those four. The fifth one is tricky. It could be, you know, any number of guys. But I will take Mamadou Diakite from Virginia. He is, I think he kind of started the year looking like maybe player of the year nationally, and then he had a little bit of a downturn, and then he's finishing strong. But he's just such an incredible two-way player that I think that I'll go with him on sort of the tail end of my first team.
Yeah, no, I can't fault any of those decisions. And so I'll keep it brief and say that the four, I agree. I had the same four, actually. Nwora, Vassell, Carey, John Mooney. I don't know that there's a whole lot else to say about that. I'll differ slightly from you and say, and I'll preface this by saying that this is what I would select. This is, if you gave me a vote, this is what I would put down, not necessarily what I'm predicting. I think I would go Trey Jones. He was kind of the holdover from Duke's team last year. And you know, I was really impressed with the steps that he took. You know, he last year, the knock on him was that he just couldn't shoot. And frankly, no one on Duke's team could shoot from the perimeter. This year, he's stepped that up to 37% in conference play, which is more than adequate to keep a defense honest, especially from the point guard position. And he really runs that team. I mean, he played almost 90% of their minutes in conference games. So that is doing – he played all 20 conference games for Duke. He doesn't leave the floor very often. He's sixth in the conference in assist rate. And so I will go with Trey Jones, but certainly Diakite has been a huge part of UVA's continued success as well. hit me up. You said you were going to tell me about the Florida State's pre. I'm blanking on this. Was Isaac on the? Did he make a ACC first team? Would Vassell, if he made it, would be Vassell be the first since Isaac?
Yeah, John Isaac actually did not make any of the three teams.
John Isaac didn't make any of the three teams.
It happens. It's hard. When there's 15 teams, it's kind of hard to watch them all. You know, so you just kind of have to.
Yeah, you know, we'll just. I think Florida State finished second that year. We'll just say that nobody on that team was worthy of voting. You know, they just finished second.
Yeah, so Dwayne Bacon was second team, and then you have to go all the way back to Michael Snare, who was second team and third team in consecutive years. Yeah, so the ACC, this is the seventh year that the ACC has had 15 teams. If you look at the voting since the ACC went to 15 teams, a team like Duke, you would expect them to have lots of guys represented on the first three teams. They've had 14, as had Virginia.
Duke, who Notre hasn't Dame. Won the ACC regular season title since 2010. Just wanted to
throw that out there. That's technicality. Yeah. UVA has won it.
Three or four times.
14 guys. Notre Dame's had 7. Clemson's had 5. Oh. NC State's had 5. Florida State's had 1. And that was a second team guy. They're dead last since the ACC went to 15 teams. And if you look at since Florida State actually joined the ACC, there were what, 7 other teams, or yeah, 7 other teams that have been in the ACC since Florida State joined, and Florida State happens to be last on that list as well. They're behind Clemson.
The rousing basketball school that is Clemson, right?
Yeah, they're behind Wake Forest has had 11 first team guys in that stretch.
So the Tim Duncan era and
that's Childress, right.
I'll give that. But the fact that Clemson's had 5 in the last 5 years is ridiculous. They've made one tournament, I think, in that time. One NCAA tournament.
Yeah, in the first 12 years that Florida State was in the ACC, Bob Sura was the only first team guy. And then we had a little bit of a run there. Tim Pickett, Al Thornton, and Tony Douglas in like a 6 or 7 year span were all first team guys. And that's it. I mean, for Florida State, since 1991-92 season, you've got Bob Sura, Tim Pickett, Al Thornton, and Tony Douglas. Those are the only first team all ACC guys in that stretch. And Duke has had 37 guys on that first team.
I'm a bit speechless. So those are interesting numbers. So Vassell, if Vassell does in fact make first team, which you and I both said we would vote for him, and Jay Billis, I think, agreed, then actually Vassell would be a pretty big accomplishment for Vassell, and that would I think he's certainly worthy of it. So clearly then that tells me that Hamilton must be, just racking up the Coach of the Year awards since he's been able to accomplish, he's a top 5 all-time wins, in ACC play, and, all these NCAA tournaments, and he's doing it with players who obviously aren't very good if they're never making first team or even in most cases even second team. So Hamilton's got to be a shoo-in, right? I mean, all these years for Coach of the Year.
Oh, yeah. Certainly this year, I think he's actually going to win it.
I've heard some groundswell for Tony Bennett because of their surge the last 6 or 7 games.
Yeah, I'm not hearing that. I've heard the same things you're hearing. I'm not believing it. Tony, they were picked 11th nationally in the preseason.
Right, so the top 11 team preseason.
Yeah, and they're going to finish what, like 18th or 19th or something.
Right.
So
right.
It was a good year for them. It was a good year, but a little disappointing compared to the media that is now saying it's his best coaching job ever. There were, I think, 12 members of the ACC media, and there's only what, like 60 something votes. So that's a significant percentage that picked Virginia to win it all, to win the ACC this year. Obviously they did not. If Tony Bennett wins this year over Leonard Hamilton, then I don't even know what. I've got a lot of bad things already to say about the ACC media, and you know,
warm up the explicit button for that podcast, right?
Right. I'll certainly have a lot more ammo. If I mean, Hamilton is a stone cold lock to win it this year. I mean, it should be unanimous, but we shall see.
It should be unanimous. Somehow it's as if the last 4 weeks, the people who were talking about Tony Bennett for coach of the year forgot that Tony Bennett was also the coach when they lost at home to South Carolina. I mean, like, does that not count against it? Or that, you know, again, Florida State was picked lower in the preseason and is finishing higher in the preseason while losing just as many players to the NBA. It's not like Florida State didn't have massive losses to graduation and the NBA last year. I actually think Coach Hamilton, I don't even think it's worth it. So, yeah, you and I clearly agree. I think he's one of probably three coaches or so that should be in serious discussion for the National Coach of the Year. Scott Drew has also done an outstanding job at Baylor. And I mean, I don't know. I think maybe for a while I could have, you know, I can't even believe I'm about to say this, but could have been on the Turgeon train up at Maryland. But I think, you know, Hamilton, Scott Drew, maybe for me would be one and two in National Coach of the Year. But so why don't we look at ACC, give me your player of the year, and then after that we'll do the second team.
Yeah, player of the year, I think it basically comes down to the two guys, and that's Vernon Carey and John Mooney. I know that Nuora was great, and you know, maybe you think it comes down to Carey and Nuora, but you know, in my mind it's Mooney and Carey, and Carey is just I think he's got to be the guy. There is no one in the ACC who presents the matchup problem that Vernon Carey does. And I think that if you look at, you know, if you use the eye test to make your vote, then, you know, he certainly gets it. And if you look more, you know, do a statistical dive, he's basically in like the top eight in every category that matters in the ACC.
I would be inclined to agree. I think I might, for me, come down to Carey and Nuora. But if the award was given on February 1st, I probably would have gone Jordan Nuora. But yeah, it's not given on February 1st. And Vernon Carey has been really, really good. You know, he's, as you said, he statistically, I think the only thing in conference play that he's not kind of top, that you would want a, you know, big man or someone of his value to be, he's 11th in block percentage, so sorry, he's only 11th instead of, you know, 8th or whatever, but everything else he's been the best player, and you can tell when he's on, Duke is, the games that they have stubbed their toe in have been games in which he's, like the Wake Forest game, he played 19 minutes and got into early foul trouble. So yeah, he's an important piece. Okay, so second team, that's right, that was the other part of that question. So just to recap, your first team was the big four that we agreed on with Vassell, Carey, Mooney, Nuora, and then you had Diakite. I had Trey Jones, so I'm assuming that Trey Jones makes your second team, but maybe I'm wrong, and then give me the other four.
Yeah, I think Trey Jones, and then if you look at that fifth spot For the first team that I had Diakite and you had Jones, I think it's between Diakite, Jones, and Elijah Hughes from Syracuse. So yeah, I think we could have gone anyway with that pick for the first team, but since I left Jones and Hughes off the first team, I will put them on the second team. I've also got Trent Forrest on there, which if you just listen to my description of how the ACC media votes, you know that the odds of Vassell being first team and Forrest being second team are pretty slim. But again, I'm not predicting the second team. I'm just saying what my vote would be, and then I'm gonna, I know that this is probably just a bad pick, but I'm gonna take Kihei Clark. I think that he's pretty efficient with shooting the ball, but every time I turn on a Virginia game, like, he's the guy who's just making things happen, and Diakite is their star, but Kihei Clark is sort of the little midget who's making, you know, waving his magic wand around and kind of making good things. He does lead the ACC in assist rate, so, you know, there's at least a little statistical validation there. And then Georgia Tech, you know, Georgia Tech finished fifth in the ACC?
They finished fifth, yeah, despite playing the whole year, probably acknowledging that they weren't going to be able to do any postseason.
Yeah, and they finished winning six of their last seven. So they had a really remarkable year. I tend to make fun of Josh Pastner a lot, and I think that he kind of deserves it. And he does not deserve any votes for Coach of the Year, but they did finish fifth. Michael DeVoe, there's a few guys on that team that you could go with. I'm going with Michael DeVoe. He is sort of their key scorer. He's a 43%. Three-point shooter. I think he shot even better in ACC play. And he wears the number zero, and I've got a soft spot in my heart for guys who wear the number zero. So I'm going to go with Michael DeVoe.
Yeah, I like your second five. You mentioned the Jones, Diakite, Hughes triumvirate that sort of was that last spot for the first team. I had Jones, and so I agree with you that Diakite and Elijah Hughes make up the top kind of two guys for me on the second team. And, it's never a shame to see Jimmy Boeheim Jimmy having to answer questions about his team losing. But Elijah Hughes has really had a nice season for Syracuse, and I do wish that he's a guy I would have liked to have seen the NCAA tournament. It's fun in March to watch shooters like that get on a roll and carry their team to a victory or two. Maybe I'll tune into an NIT game if Boeheim's able to get his bunch into the NIT. So I've also got Trent Forrest. I do not expect him to be on the second team. I probably expect him to be on the third team in real life, or maybe the all-defense team. But I just – if you've watched Florida State play, you know that he is the heart and soul of it. And so to me, that is an appropriate spot for the team that was the outright champ. Your Georgia Tech selection, I love that you took a guy from Georgia Tech. And I think DeVoe, I could easily see the argument for DeVoe. I've actually got Alvarado on my second team. And, nice. For me, it came down to – He only played 22 games this year. He had some injuries, I think, early in the year. And, they lost Georgia early by four. They lost an OT to Arkansas. They lost, they shouldn't have anyways, but they lost to Ball State. I think that if Alvarado's playing those games, I don't think they lose those games. And I think Alvarado's, as he's gotten healthier during the year, now you've seen them, as you mentioned, win six or so of their last seven and really turn into a team that, quite honestly, I bet there's a lot of folks in the ACC tournament who are glad that the Yellow Jackets are not participating, because that's a team that could have made a run to the semifinals. Alvarado has had a really nice year, third in steal percentage in the league, ninth in assist rate, 10th in true shot percentage. So he's really done a lot of things well for Georgia Tech. And then I'll go with DJ Funderburk for my last slot. He's been, I don't know. So if Kihei Clark for your selection is sort of the rich man's Chris Likes, right? He's like the better midget in the conference. Funderburk for me is the super poor, homeless man's Obi Toppin. But he does a lot of that same. I mean, he's just an animal around the basket. He dunks, he rebounds, he's efficient. I think he's top two or three in the conference in 2-point percentage. So, and NC State is still on that bubble. NC State's got a shot here to make some noise in Greensboro and get to the NCAA tournament. If they do, I think that'll be because of DJ Funderburk. I don't know. Thoughts on him versus Clark?
No, I like the Funderburk pick. He's got a fun name. He's got a fun game. I think what it kind of illustrates is that there's a pretty big drop off from the first team to second team this year. I think usually it's a little closer. This year it's pretty stark comparison. The first team, maybe might struggle against the second team because they don't actually have a point guard, but, or at least my version, your version would probably absolutely just curb stomp the second team.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about it. There is a pretty big drop off. So maybe that'll benefit Forrest's chances a little bit. Maybe there'll be, just since he is a senior and maybe has some name brand built up. There was another question, right? I think you got a question from on the Twitter or something.
Yeah, so this came from at JDI723. And he says that Trent will absolutely be up in the rafters. That's up for debate. That was a little sidebar from me. And the rest of the question is, but what other players from Ham's tenure do you believe deserve to be up there? So first of all, you're at the Tuck all the time. Do you remember from looking up who's up there right now?
I probably should have a picture of some. I can tell you that Sura and Cassell are absolutely next to each other on one side. If you've been to the Tuck, they've got all the banners sort of around on the outer edge at the top of the rafters, and the women are on one side and the men are on the other. And so the NCAA tournament appearances are all sort of in the middle. And then on the angles there, there are the jerseys, both, you know, again, on opposite sides, but men's and women's. And then in the end zones, if you will, are the ACC championship banners, which one just got unfurled yesterday, as well as the men's Final Four banner from 72. So I'm trying to – Cassell and Sura are definitely on one side together, and I know that there's – Cowens and King and Fedora together. So there's six. There's one I'm missing. It could be Petty. I can give you five of the six. Needless to say, Cowens, King, Cassell, Sura, that is a lofty bar. In my opinion, perhaps a bit too lofty when you go to places like UNC and see Joseph Forte in the rafters. But So did I hear you? The question is, Trent will obviously be there, and then who else from the Hamilton era should? Is that the question?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I don't know if Trent will obviously be there. I hope Trent does. I think if I were the ones making the decision, Trent Forrest would absolutely have a spot in the rafters. I given the list that I just shared, I don't know if he will ever reach that point. Hamilton era. So we're going back to 2002. There have been some absolute stud players. I think Tony Douglas is the first. Tony Douglas should 100% be in there. He had a message. A lot of the players yesterday sent messages to the team and Coach Ham via like a video message that they played on the scoreboard. And it's all part of what Hamilton's, you know, legacy is that he's crafted such a great family, a true family program. But so Tony Douglas should 100% be part of the rafters. I would say Al Thornton, even it's a shame that that man did not get to play in March Madness. Florida State was completely screwed the year that Tony broke his hand, and Al, I mean, that was a Sweet 16 team. So Al and Tony, and I would say maybe, you know what, didn't you say Tim Pickett was a first team All ACC guy earlier?
He was, yeah. Tim Pickett.
So give me Tim Pickett, and then I would say Trent Forrest would be, if I had to say, those should be the next four. And if you maybe give a fifth, I'd probably say Terrence Mann. If I had to. So Cassell, Mann, Forrest, but first and foremost, Tony Douglas and Al Thornton and Tim Pickett.
Yeah. And Pickett just played 2 years at Florida State, right?
He did just play 2 years, yeah. But I tell you what, being in those that was coming off seasons in which Florida State lost to American at home and we went 9-21, and Tim Pickett revitalized some fresh air into that arena. His get off a three in a phone booth style was, it was just mind-boggling to watch, and Tim Pickett really, I think, gave Hamilton a little bit of early momentum to get some juice going on the recruitment trail.
Yeah, because I think back to Mitchell Wiggins, you know, not that I was there to watch Mitchell Wiggins play, but he only played 2 years. And no one at Florida State has averaged over 20 points for their career except for Mitchell Wiggins, and he averaged over 23.
Wow.
Scored over 1,000 points in just 46 games.
Yeah,
you know, wow. And he's not in the rafters. So, you know, I got to wonder if you know, Tim Pickett is ever has a chance of getting up there. I agree with you that those are the three. So Pickett, Tony Douglas and Al Thornton, they all should be up there. I have no idea why they're not. It makes absolutely zero sense. It's not like you have to, you know, go out and buy these guys a house or something because you hung their jersey in the rafter. I mean, it's free. It doesn't cost Florida State anything. I don't understand why we're not embracing, you know, a little more of our own history. I would add Terrence Mann to that group. I think that Terrence Mann absolutely deserves to be up there. He, you know, is sort of to me the face of the real turnaround at Florida State. We had some other talent around him, but he was the 4-year guy. And then follow him up with Trent. You know, I think that he absolutely deserves to be up there. And I don't understand Florida State's thinking by making this super exclusive club that keeps out guys like, you know, Mitchell Wiggins. Like, why isn't he up there? You know, yeah. or Hugh Durham. I don't know. Maybe.
Hugh Durham was I was able to find while this was going on. Hugh Durham is the other one that I couldn't.
Okay, got it.
So at least you're you don't have to go on that rant. Yeah. That's on me. Hugh Durham is the sixth that I couldn't remember.
All right, Ron King, maybe put his profile up there.
Yeah, it's Collins, Durham, Surah, Cassell, King, and Dave Fedor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's way too exclusive of a club for, you know, a basketball program that has never won a national title. They've got one Final Four. It's like, what are you waiting for? You got guys who are first team all ACC players. You know, Al Thornton is one of the most dominant players in FSU history. What the hell's the hold up to, you know, put him up in the rafters?
Yeah, I would, in general, I would agree. And, you know, it's interesting. You think of a guy like Dwayne Bacon, who scored 1,000 points in 2 years and was part of the program shifting turnaround and, you know, the second team all I see. I don't know. I don't know if there has to be a line drawn somewhere, right? Like we can't put everybody up in the rafters and, you know, so I don't know where that line is drawn, but I would say that it should be drawn further down in the sandbox than Sam Cassell and Ron King.
Yeah, I think the line is Michael Snare. Like, if you can argue whether or not Michael Snare belongs up in the rafters, and you know, I would maybe say no. But you know, if guys who are clearly better and more important to the program, you know, above him, they should be up there.
Tony Douglas for me is. I think you could make an argument that Tony Douglas might be more important than Sam Cassell, and I love me some Sam I Am. But Tony Douglas was here longer. What he was able to do, he led the ACC in scoring and for a season, right? He led the ACC in scoring and was ACC Defensive Player of the Year the same year. And kind of carried the entire team on his back, like basically willed Florida State to an ACC championship game. Something Sam Cassell, we did not appear in that early, those early 90s teams never even made it, I think, past like the quarterfinals or something. And then, you know, also got Florida State back in the NCAA tournament for the first time in a decade. So Tony Douglas is, that to me is, so the line should be somewhere beyond him for sure. Yeah. Right? Maybe Michael Tony is a good place to draw it, but the line should be past Tony Douglas.
Tony could be first team all Florida State for all time. You know, it's Dave Cowens and Bob Surah, I think, are the two locks for that team.
Right. Surah has like 2,000 points, right? I mean, 2,200 points. Yeah.
And Dave Cowens was Dave Cowens. But
right.
But yeah, the fact that guys like Tony Douglas are not up there means that Florida State is not addressing this situation correctly.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, hopefully that is a situation where we can – now, let's capitalize on it, right? We have this opportunity where we just dropped another banner. We hopefully are going to see a big March run coming off back-to-back second weekends. And so hopefully this is one where we can, you know, Hamilton can keep up the team over the next few years and keep on bringing in the roster, the kind of perfect roster match pieces that he's done. And we can use this energy to bring back a few of the folks like Tony Douglas and Al Thornton to give them the respect and honor and recognition that they deserve. All right. That went on, I think, a little longer than I expected, frankly, but I think it was a good dialogue. Let's touch a little bit on, just really quick, on championship week here, plus the end of the regular season in the Big Ten, as well as just a brief brief preview of the ACC tournament. I'll start with that just because the bottom line is that, so the ACC tournament is upon us. It is a 5-day event now, and so it begins on Tuesday. Of course, Florida State does not have to play until Thursday. They were one of four teams earning the double bye. The other three, if you don't know the seeding, so Duke, Virginia, and Louisville actually all tied for second place in the ACC, but Virginia is the team with their win yesterday over Louisville that has the tiebreak over those other two. So they are the 2 seed. Louisville is the 3 seed, and Duke drops to the 4 seed, which means Florida State and Duke. So Clemson and Miami are the 8-9. Everybody below Georgia Tech gets shuffled around because Georgia Tech's not in it. Clemson and Miami are the 8-9. They will play each other on Wednesday. We will probably hopefully have a preview of both those teams up. The winner of that game will play Florida State at 12:30 on Thursday. And then if the seeds went chalk, Florida State and Duke would play in the semifinals on Friday night at 7 p.m. We will preview all of this, but Michael, do you want an FSU-Duke semifinal matchup?
I do not. I would like an FSU-NC State.
Okay, so you would eschew the chance at revenge at a better chance of winning the ACC championship.
Yes, I would like to win. Florida State would be a significant favorite over NC State and a significant underdog against Duke. It would obviously if I could pick the path that we go through knowing that we win, then yeah, sure. Absolutely, I want to beat Duke. But the same thing will go in the NCAA tournament. You know, if we're the 2 seed, you know, then we play the winner of the 7-10. I want it to be the weaker of those two teams.
And our 1 seed to be the second 1 seed in history to be knocked out by the 16.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So fair enough. We will get more into the ACC tournament later in the week. What about the other? We had talked on the last podcast about team, you know, hoping that there are some upsets. Have any happened? And then so I think one big one happened out west. But then also, are there any on the horizon?
Yeah. So San Diego State got knocked off, and Utah State, who was probably a bubble team anyway, is going to the dance. But that does open up the. That's one of the dominoes that has to fall for Florida State to have any chance at being a 1 seed. So that was good to see. The Missouri Valley has been just absolutely bananas. The top 3 seeds are all gone, and the championship, which is today, will be between Bradley and Valpo. So this is one of those situations that we talked about on the pod. So Northern Iowa was the number 1 seed, and you want them to lose because it puts a weaker team into the tournament, which in turn creates weaker 15 seeds. So you want all of these tourney winners to be, you know, bad teams to basically maximize the chance that Florida State, you know, gets a weaker opponent in that first round. Let's see what else, excuse me, what else is
Liberty Lipscomb is today?
Yeah, Liberty Lipscomb, that's the Atlantic Sun, and Liberty's the 1 seed. They also have the most dislikable player in college basketball. Surprise, go to a school like Liberty. And Lipscomb is the 3 seed. We absolutely want them, to win that, tournament. The SoCon, let's see, the 2, 3, and 4 seeds have all been knocked out. So all we need now is the 1 seed. And that goes on today at 4. So it'll be a fun game to watch. Western Carolina against Eastern Tennessee State. And we definitely want Western Carolina to pull that one out. And if they win, it actually kind of opens up a path, potential path for Chattanooga, who you might remember earlier in the season, we beat them by like 40. They could actually, you know, make it to the dance, which will give us, you know, one more win over a tourney team. So that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what about the Big Ten? They're still playing their regular season games. We got Ohio State at Michigan State and Michigan at Maryland. Does it feel like we're kind of locked into a 2 seed now? Or I guess we'd still probably root against Maryland and probably Michigan State, right?
Yeah. I'm a little concerned that if Florida State loses that first round game to Clemson or Miami, then we could drop to a 3. We're pretty solid 2 at this point, maybe the most solid of the 2s, like us or San Diego State. So we still want the teams right behind us, which would be Seton Hall, Villanova, Duke, Creighton, Michigan State, and Maryland. You know, we want all those teams to at least take one more loss just to really lock us into a two regardless of what happens in the ACC tournament.
Yeah, and I'll one other thing that's been sort of creeping around in my mind is that Kentucky, despite Ashton Hagen's I don't know if he's had some sort of falling out with Coach Cal. He's taken a leave of absence from the team. They still were able to go into UF and come back. You know, Mike White and company choked away an 18-point second half lead yesterday. Kentucky is playing well. They are. You know, Calipari has a way of getting his freshmen and sophomores that he kind of cobbles together every year, you know, from all these big recruits. He definitely improves them throughout the season. I think Calipari has maybe 6 or 7 Elite Eights, you know, at Kentucky. So I would rather avoid Kentucky, to be quite honest. And if Michigan State and Maryland are able to continue to take losses, I think that opens up to where Kentucky can rise up to a 2 seed. And if Florida State and Kentucky are both on the 2 line, that means we do not have to worry about Kentucky being our 3 seed in the South or East or whichever one we're in. So that to me, I don't know. Are you worried about Kentucky at all? Would you rather avoid them, or am I just kind of making up stuff here?
I don't know. It's like, yeah, they are playing well, but they're also playing SEC teams. I think Florida State matches that. I'd rather, like, I'm thinking like Michigan State, Ohio State, West Virginia, Creighton. Like those are the teams for me that I would like to be the fellow twos, just to make sure that we avoid them.
Creighton's scary. I'll give you that. I want Creighton as a 2 as well.
I wouldn't be slapping anybody high fives if I saw that we were the 2 and Kentucky was the 3. But also, I think there's probably some other teams that I'd be more worried about.
All right. Well, maybe I'm just being paranoid over here. But at any rate, I think this is a good pod, and it's always fun to to talk about a championship. And so we'll be back throughout this week as the ACC tournament goes on. I don't know exactly when and what time, you know, with these games that are going to be on back-to-back days, but we'll try to figure something out. And hopefully we can be doing another championship pod edition a week from today. Michael, it's been a pleasure. I hope, you know, you were with us in spirit yesterday in the Tucker Center, and for everyone else out there that was able to enjoy that, congratulations, Seminoles fans and players and coaches, certainly earned this one.